Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
Welcome to USA Football's Coaching Coordinator Podcast. Today we're going to look at an issue that is very important to the game. We talk about safety all the time. We see this issue of player safety come up time and time again in the media, and it's really driven a lot of the narrative around the game. So joining me today as our guest is Dr. Alan Champain, who works with taking a look at these things that we're concerned about. He has a company called Elite Neurokinetics, a nonprofit in which they've been able to study the game a little bit, and we'll have him talk about his methods. But before we get into that, Doctor, welcome to the show. I'm excited to have you here today.
Thanks, Coach. Yeah, it's really a pleasure. And I'll, to be honest, this is really a life goal for me to be on this podcast. So I'm excited to be talking about some of our work and see how we can build a platform moving forward for safer football.
Absolutely. And you come from a background of football. You played at North Carolina. You were a Tar Heel. So tell us a little bit about, I guess, your journey here through the game and how you've come to this point right now where you're studying the game.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's the most important part of the story. And so obviously I grew up playing football, and, our family didn't have much growing up. And so football was really my platform to grow, both as a young man and also as a student. And so really, the game provided me with opportunities to obviously go to North Carolina. Coming from Montreal, that was in Canada, that was a big deal for me in terms of achievement. But what people will sometimes forget is that, the game of football is beyond what we see on the field on Saturdays or on Friday Night Lights or, on Sundays. The game of football really provides young men and, and now women an opportunity to grow and learn and develop all these life skills that sometimes are forgotten. So that's why, I'm so committed to making this game safer and researching it, because it has shaped my life and it continues to shape my life every day. And so it has a special place in my heart, that's for sure. So yeah, so growing up in Montreal, then I went, ended up in North Carolina under the Morehead Cain Scholarship. And so thanks to them for, all the funding. And I was a preferred walk-on on the Tar Heels, which was a really great 4 years. And during that time, I got to research under Dr. Kevin Guskiewicz, who's probably one of the top leaders in concussion safety and knowledge in the USA. And so Dr. Guskiewicz took me under his wing and really taught me this idea of behavior modification, which is using, science as a tool to enhance coaching practices. And that grew on me for a while. And once I finished my career about a couple of years ago, I wanted to pursue this idea that we could use science as a way to make the game safer. And that's key, because sometimes we think of safety as almost like a detriment to the game. I think there's a lot of the worry that, making the game safer will make the game, whether you want to call it softer or, whatever term you want to use. But I quite disagree with that. I think that safety is really complementary to performance. And the idea that we can enhance coaching practices, we can enhance players' technique and allow them to really become the best version of themselves using the data and using scientific principles, it's quite important. So I really wanted to pursue that avenue. And so I ended up doing my PhD here at Queen University in Kingston, Ontario, through the Center for Neuroscience Studies and Dr. DJ Cook. And our main two branch of interest is, one, we use MRIs to look into the brain and how it reacts to repeated head impacts. And so it's really important for us to understand those mechanisms, because once we can appreciate how the brain, how sensitive the brain is to head impacts, then we can use the movement and we can use our understanding of biomechanics to actually hopefully try to lessen that effect. And so that's why we started, the second branch of our research, which is really focused on the movement and how we can use the movement to predict and hopefully mitigate that risk of exposure to head impacts. And so, yeah, it's been a great journey so far. And I'm thankful every day that for the game to be part of my life. And I also coach here at Queens. And so we try to incorporate, all that research through our coaching practices here. And we see great changes. So it's really exciting work.
Yeah, I think really you're uniquely positioned as somebody who's studying this, and at the same time, you're still coaching the game as well. So you're looking not only at the safety side of things, but you know this as a coach, the performance side matters as well. And it's, to me, it's about creating a better, safer game, not, you know, eliminating one of those words, better or safer. It has to be, as you call it, safety-driven performance, you know, done in a way that, you know, if we can find, again, those biomechanical advantages, performance advantages from that standpoint, then at the same time start to mitigate some of the risk of injury, you know, and injury and contact can come, you know, to the body as well. And I think correct technique starts to help say that. You know, I wrote a series of articles leading up to it where I just outlined, you know, all the things we've been doing in our game to make it better, to make it safer, and, you know, talked about things coming from scientists in the medical field, talking about some of the different products that have come up. So, like, I don't know all the study behind it, but a little bit about the, you know, the blood restriction with the neck collar as a way to help that. Looking at the different technology really that's put into helmet to help monitor contacts, the accelerometers, and I'll let you talk about a little bit about that stuff that you work with here in a bit. But, you know, as I look at this, and I did talk about the history of this game, and, you know, it's nothing is new about safety issues coming up for players because it is such a physical game, because there is the contact. We've always looked at that, and it's always faced some challenges. You know, you think back to Teddy Roosevelt essentially saving the game, president of the United States, wanted to see it continue. He believed in it so much in developing young men that, you know, he helped save the game by looking at rule changes. And, you know, we don't use the flying wedge anymore, and we have the forward pass and all those kinds of things that have proliferated. So I see the changes that come along with this as something that just helps the game evolve into something better. My thought is it has always evolved into something better. It's certainly a challenge with those changes, and you get different opinions from fans, coaches, players about, you know, what it's doing to the game. But honestly, like, I think it's an exciting time for football because of these things too, and especially now, as to me, this is going to help grow the game as we start to learn more about what we can do from a coaching standpoint, from a technique standpoint, to have better performance and safety at the same time.
I mean, yeah, I think, I mean, there's so many great points you just said that, I mean, I'm just going to try to touch on a few of them. The first one you said was, you know, key was that, you know, our team is made of both current coaches, scientists, and former players. And I think that for many years, that's really what was missing in this field was, you know, is that bridge between the scientists and the coaches and the players, because it is a different language and it's a different culture. And sometimes it's really easy for scientists to kind of forget about, you know, the goal of the research, the real vision, and how that's actually impacting, you know, the whether it's the game or the life of these athletes and the coaches. And from the other perspective, you know, sometimes for coaches and for athletes, it's sometimes hard to forget or to understand and appreciate the possible, you know, benefits and outcomes of having the research and the data behind it. And so that was, you know, the first thing that our team really wanted to address is to provide football with an evidence-based approach to make the game better. And I think that science has done great things for our society in terms of, you know, developing new drugs and developing new treatments to help other conditions. And so why can't we apply the same idea to football without taking away that physicality? And I think that's also a really key important because, like you said, football is physical. And any players or parents or coaches or sporting, you know, people that are involved with the game, we love that. And I love football for being physical. When I coach my players, they know that there's a certain expectation from physicality. I guess what my argument or our argument as a team is that physicality doesn't have to come at the cost of safety, right? Like, it's not a function of safety and or technique. You can be the most physical player on the field, but have great technique and keep your head away from contact. And there's evidence behind that. And there's, you know, there's biomechanics evidence behind that. There's movement-based evidence behind that. And so our job now as a team and as a community, you know, whether it's USA Football and Football Canada and our team and other research that are doing similar work, which is, you know, really awesome to see, is to come together and figure out what are the best guidelines and coaching practices that we can use to optimize that athlete development and really promote long-term health for players, right? So if you play better, if you have better technique over time, you are likely to just develop as a better athlete. And that's really important for us. And I think, you know, you said, you know, football is on top right now. to me, football has been one of the most proactive sports in the last few years in terms of doing things, right? So, yes, the concussion movie came out, and, you know, it was great to raise awareness about, you know, some issues that were in the past. But since then, you've seen an increasing amount of funding for research, right? Like, our work at UNC, I remember, was high, you know, somewhat funded by the NFL. And so you see that people are interested. People want to hear more. And for us in the community here, the coaches and the parents and the school boards and the organizations, they're really receptive to the idea that scientists are getting involved. So for parents and coaches and sports organizations, it's really great to see that scientists are getting involved because, again, right, it feels like the sport is being cared for. And I think that moving forward, that's going to be really important for all of us to if we want to grow this game to be better. And then lastly, the last one I want to touch on that you said was, right, like, evolution is really exciting, right? The fact that that we can continuously evolve the game using newer technology and science and new coaching practices is part of what makes this game exciting, right? Like, we don't want something that's static. We want a dynamic environment. And coaches do that all the time. They come up with different drills. They come up with different ways to, you know, to test the players, to train the players. And so why can't we use the same principle and the data behind it to actually improve safety through a safety-driven approach?
Yeah, that's exactly it. I think the fun in football really is in how dynamic it is, that it is constantly changing and evolving. I mean, if you compare things to, you know, how to hit a baseball as an example, right, that's going to be relatively unchanged. I mean, there'll be tweaks in how they look at that and biomechanics, et cetera. I mean, a basketball shot's a basketball shot. Yeah, there's going to be different, you know, offenses and defenses they come up with. But football, man, there's so many moving parts. There's so many ways to do it. And the fun part is where we're at right now, figuring out the best methods. And I know we've come into a philosophy of blocking at USA Football that completely removes the head as a tool for contact. And I think that's so important. That really is part of what you're looking at in your study. So the article that I came across in one of my friends, sports scientists, sent this along to me, data-informed intervention improves football technique and reduces head impact. So this is the study that you guys put together. And, you know, let's talk about that overall. So first of all, kind of give us an overview of what you were wanting to accomplish here in the purpose of this.
Absolutely. The idea behind it was, so again, going back to our research on the brain using the MRI, what we've noticed over time is that, you know, the brain is sensitive to head impacts. And so what we want to see is can we use a data-informed approach to proactively reduce, you know, that exposure over time? And so if we can reduce the amount of exposure to head impacts, you know, does that help the player become better athletes on the field? And so the hope here was to create a model or an approach that was, you know, scalable, but also data-informed. And so we partnered up with a local team here called the Junior Gales. So it's a competitive summer team in Kingston, and they basically have the best players in the region. And so we want to work with the best because it's always important. And the key concept to remember here in athletes in general, especially football players, is that, you know, we're obsessed with improvement. And so if we figure if we can provide these athletes, you know, tools to enhance their technique in a way that would make them safer, perhaps that would allow us to reduce that exposure to head impacts and just improve their technique in general. And so we partnered up with the Junior Gales and we implemented this combine-like testing. And the idea behind the combine is that usually typically what you see in a combine is, you know, you'll see a 40-yard dash, you'll see a 5-10-5 vert, all these different, you know, really performance-based tests. And these are giving you numbers. And these numbers are important because they allow for the athletes to, you know, compare each other, right? So you run your 40-yard dash and you turn around and you ask your buddy, hey, how fast you run? And so that makes you want to run faster the next time, right? Because the athletes are competitive. And that's the beauty of being, you know, part of a team, is that you can use that competitiveness, you know, between each other to build skill set. And so we said, well, what if we could put a number on safety? What if we could organize a controlled environment where the athletes, you know, will carry through a different set of drills and then ask to execute a blocking or tackling in different situations and then score that. And so we created four drills that were fairly basic, right? Trying to implement different parts of the game, cutting, changing direction, breaking down acceleration, and then incorporate, you know, a tackling or a blocking component that was completely non-contact. So all done on the padded shield. And the idea was that if you can perform a good tackle on the padded shield in a controlled environment, that should translate to the game. But if you can't do that, everyone's going to have different weaknesses, right? So perhaps some players, you know, they don't put their head on the right side. They don't use their hips properly. They don't use their hand. They don't come under control before the contact. But everyone is very different. And so if we can identify those individual weaknesses, perhaps then we can address them, you know, at the player and the team level. We can modify them, and then we think that we can proactively, you know, reduce their risk of injury, and then, you know, reduce that exposure to head impacts. And so we carried that experiment over time. The way it really worked in a simple way was we tested all the players preseason, then we hid all the data. So we didn't show anything to anybody because we wanted to test the player again midseason to see how much did they improve from the coaches or from the team's coaching practices, right? So how good were the players, you know, how much better they got at tackling and blocking just from what the team had implemented during the regular season. And then we brought the players back for testing. And then once the midseason testing was done, we basically dropped everything, right? So we're talking videos, we had report cards, we had team-based interventions. Every day we'd have, you know, a 5 to 10 minute intervention that was very catered toward specific drills that we had identified in the team as weaknesses. And so we said, you know, we're going to work on those specifically and break down that movement to really build it back up. And then so we did that for, you know, half the season, twice a week. Then what we did is we, postseason, we brought, you know, the whole team back and tested them again using those four drills to show that, you know, basically there was no change between the first two time points and a significant improvement postseason. The second part of layer of evidence that we added was during the very last testing session, we added two new drills that the players had never seen before. And that was important because we wanted to test if the skills that were acquired over time were transferable to new game-like situations. And so again, we added a tackling drill and a blocking drill, and that incorporated different pre-movement assessments. And the idea again is to show that when the players were exposed to this new drill, they did much better than what they were first exposed to, the, you know, the original drills, which was really exciting for us because it showed us that those skills were acquired and transferable. And the third layer of evidence that we wanted to add on was, again, like you mentioned before, those helmet accelerometers. And those are key because they're very small. They're put in the helmet. And the one that we use are called G-Force Tracker, which is a Canadian company here in London. And they've been really great to work with. And so we put the sensors in the helmet, and we use that during the whole season to kind of monitor the player-specific, you know, exposure over time. And so how often do they use their head in contact, basically? And what we showed was that after 1 month of the intervention, players reduce their head, you know, their daily exposure to head impact during practice by about 30%, which was really exciting. So all that to say that, you know, this was our first set of evidence to show that, one, there is a way to use the data-informed intervention to, you know, improve technique because we saw improvements in the player's technique to engage in contact safer. And we used a few different methods to, you know, blind the study, which is described more in the paper. And the second findings really was that using this approach, we can reduce exposure to head impacts, which is really important. So moving forward, you know, we feel pretty, you know, we're really excited about this approach, and we've been working with many different teams and now partnering up with, you know, Football Canada to incorporate this baseline analysis in the team's general practice because it's really simple and it's really quick. But what it does is it provides us an idea of, you know, which player may be at higher risk, who needs to work on what, and how can we build the skill set component for the team over time. And the truth is that this is going to change every year, right? Because every year you get different players, different age group, different strengths and weaknesses. And so using that data allows us to really set the stage for success in the team, and by that process, reduce the risk of injury.
It's a couple things I have questions about the study, and I guess points of clarification here. So you guys started out, you had that combine, and you did nothing with the team until the midseason testing again, which essentially ran them through some more drills. Is that correct?
Yeah. So between the first time point, which was preseason, and the mid time point, we didn't do anything. So I went to practice. We had the sensors in the helmet, but we didn't show them any of the data. We basically hid everything. And then when we tested them the second time, we used the exact same combine. So the combine was repeated, you know, the same combine was repeated 3 times. And again, the idea for doing that was, it's basically called an internal control. And so you're assessing how much better the player is getting just from the own, you know, their own team's practices, right? So from their own coaching of the team. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And so then these drills that you ran, and then I believe you used these set of drills, maybe a different one. We'll get to that in a second. But you used the drills throughout up to that point, or they didn't use those drills again till midway through the season?
Yeah, so these drills were specifically designed for the testing. So the players, you know, they didn't practice those drills during practice. And even when we did the intervention during the second part of the season, we didn't use those drills specifically, right? Because that kind of takes away the point of the study. What we did is we broke down each individual movement in a specific intervention. So, for example, one day we'd be working on, you know, tracking the hip or head placement or using your hands properly, or, you know, coming control. So we really took down the criteria that we felt the team was, you know, lacking or not doing as well on based on our initial evaluation. And then, you know, broke those down to the nitty gritty to improve them.
And implemented then the protocol to improve those things and to start to remove some of the head impact, correct?
Yes. Yeah, exactly. So then once the second time point was done, we believe that, you know, every player learns differently. And so the first thing that we did is we provided each player with a report card that said, for each drill, here are the things you did really well, and here are the things that you didn't do well. And in terms of on top of the report card, we also gave them the individual clip for each of those drills. And so the players could watch themselves, right? And then kind of cross-reference that with the report to make sure that, you know, they understood what their weaknesses was. So that's really important for the individual performance, because now it's challenging the athlete to get better at these specific skills. What we also did is we looked at the team results and said, okay, the team in general doesn't do this specific, you know, skill really well. And so we're going to incorporate those drills pre-practice. So after the players would warm up, we would do about a 10 to 15 minute intervention where we would work on those skills, right? But you have to be careful here, because when you say intervention, we're not saying taking time away from practice or from doing something that's not useful, right? This is part of practice. And this should be part of everyone's practice. Like, coaches should be obsessed with fundamental football technique. And that's the hardest thing that I deal with from a coach perspective at Queens in university football, is that my young players come in and they lack technique, right? And so they know schemes and they understand football, you know, IQ, but they just don't have the fundamental skills that we need. And the truth is that when you get to college, whatever you learn in high school, like, we scrap that. We'll give you the playbook. We'll tell you where to go, right? But if you don't have those fundamental skills, that fundamental technique, I think you're a step behind. And so part of this intervention in general is going to have to refocus coaching practices towards fundamental skills. And we think that kind of a, you know, culture set is going to set up players for safer and better performance, because they're going to have the proper mechanics to get things done.
And I want to add to that, not just more fundamentals, but being prescriptive about it, that you have to understand where your players are, where those weaknesses are in their technique that are leading to errors or cause safety concerns, etc. You know, I know a lot of coaches will film up their group periods, their team periods, but, you know, as I'm hearing it, there's a ton of value in making sure you're looking at those drills and being able to review those drills and finding some kind of method to report back to your players about, you know, here's the things you need to really work on this particular week or this next practice to improve your technique.
Yeah, I think that's such an important point. And it's funny to say, because, I mean, for us, you know, at UNC, that's how we prep for games, right? The way we prep for games, at least in most football teams, is we look at the opponent, right? We'll look at a tackle, we'll look at a guard, and we'll break them down. We'll say, here are their weaknesses, here are their size, here's what they're good at, all right? And then we'll set up different moves or, you know, different game plan to compete against that. And so the fundamental concept behind that is that you're using information to inform practices, right, from a performance standpoint. And so I think it's key that we do the same thing for safety, right? Why can't we use the film from practice or, you know, some sort of preseason assessment to understand where our players are in terms of development, and then find some way to provide that feedback, which is really what we're working on, and, you know, help them address those quickly.
Yeah, and you know, we used to have kind of that built-in obstacle of not being able to do that at practice, but, you know, everybody has a camera in their pocket with their phone, or you can get an iPad. I mean, this does not need to be super technical on the video side. It just needs to be captured and reviewed. And honestly, once you get into the groove, and I'm sure your analysts who looked at all this video, when you get into the groove of understanding exactly what you're seeing, I think a couple things happen as a coach. Number one, after there's that learning curve, okay, this is, you know, the wrong position in this certain technique, his feet are in the right position, he doesn't have the right bend in his hips, whatever it might be, you start to develop an eye for it, not just on video, but that carries over to the field. So for as a coach, I think visual acuity is so important. This actually helps you develop as a coach too. Yes, it may take a little bit more time, but you know, I think with where we're at right now, our players deserve that, right? They put a lot of time into this. They want to improve. Let's take a little bit more time to be able to review things and pick out a few things here and there that we can improve in the next practice.
Oh yeah, and that's so key. And I think, you know, both of them, you know, as a scientist and as a coach, knowing your players is number one. And I think that's probably one of the best concepts, the best way to think about how we're going to make this game better. If you really know the players inside out, if you know their strengths and their weaknesses, already there, you're a better coach, right? Because every time you step on the field, you can, and you may see something, you can address it right away. And you know where the risk is because you know what players are going to be, you know, have difficulties with different situations. And so this is really why we created Elite Neurokinetics, is because, like you said, phones are available anywhere, right? Like cameras now in this day and age, they're really easy to access. So what we want to build is a platform where you can upload, you know, your player doing these drills to us, and then we can return it to you right away with the feedback, you know, the weaknesses, the strength, and then the players can access their profile and really get a look of like, okay, this is what I'm doing, this is what I need to work on, and then use that to help the coaches, you know, aggregate all this data into their practices. And so it's really a collaboration between, you know, the scientists and the coaches to enhance that process and really optimize, you know, player development. Because like you said, in the end, our goal as coaches is to make these players reach their full potential. If we don't do that, we, in my opinion, at least, you know, we failed their duty, because they came to us, they committed to our program, and they said, I want to be, you know, I want to play in the NFL, or I want to play in the CFL, or I want to be the MVP, right? And so everything that we can do to make that happen is part of our duty. And that doesn't include, you know, just being the top sack, you know, defensive end in the league, because you also have to stay healthy, right? Staying healthy is a key component of that process to become the greatest player in the league. And so we have to ensure that we balance the performance and the safety in a way that we can, you know, optimize player health as well.
And then I think the important part that you talked about here was this postseason testing and the way that was done, that you did show transference of this skill, which is impactful, because you know this, you can train to a drill and become good at that drill and then not transfer that to something else, a game. So you have, you know, in this experimental part, the postseason part, you've set it up in a way that you can show the transference of these skills that essentially show the results that you are able to reduce head impacts.
Yeah, I think, and that was, you know, that was so important for the design and the validity of the study for me, because personally, I know that, you know, if I don't do really well and you tell me I didn't do very well in the drill, I'm going to become obsessed with it, right? Like, I'm just going to do it over and over and over until I become great at it, right? And so I knew that most of the athletes would, you know, would think the same way. And so we had to have a way to kind of throw a curveball and say, okay, let's see if you can apply those acquired skills in a new situation. Because really, if you think of, you know, game situation, there's so much going on, right? Like, if you're a linebacker, you have to give the proper alignment, read the pre-snap alignment, react to the snap, see where the back's going, see where the quarterback's looking, is there a crossing route, right? There's so much going on in terms of like data integration at the moment. And so your movement and your technique, they have to become subconscious. They have to become, motor memory. And so doing this kind of, you know, doing these new drills that the players had never seen before allowed us to really say, okay, you know what? They have learned these skills and they can apply them now to new situation, which made us feel really good about, you know, what happens on the field.
And the results, as you said, were a reduction of 30%. And this was just after 1 month of training. So you did not carry this out for the whole season. I don't know if you guys have any way to project this. And I know you're going to continue your studies. But if you were to implement this type of a protocol of of really, again, being able to analyze, especially in terms of all these contact skills, analyze where there's some issues that cause or are more conducive to causing head impacts. You start that at day one with this protocol and being prescriptive about how you work at these things. What do you think the reduction will be over a course of a whole season of training a team with these methods?
I think that's a great question. And, you know, we have to be careful in terms of how we do the predictions because we don't actually have the data to back it up now. But what I will say is that I don't think I don't think we can erase all head impacts, right? I think we have to be conscientious in the fact that whether it's 30% or 40% decrease in, you know, if that's the top that we can reach, well, if you think about a lifetime exposure, 40% is quite a lot, right? And I think I really like the way you use the word prescribed, right? Like right now in medicine, the really hot topic is prescribed medicine, right? So prescribing medical care that's catered to the patient. And I think that's a really good way to understand this approach is that it's prescribed coaching. It's assessing and modifying the risk at the individual level with the attempt to reduce that exposure to head impacts, not just within a season, but within a lifetime, right? So if you want to play 10, 15 years of football with high school and college and maybe playing the pros, you're going to sustain a significant amount of head impacts over time. And so if we can use this kind of approach to mitigate that, I think we've done our job to make this game better and then really promote players' health over time.
For you and your colleagues, what's next? You know, there's so much, obviously, you can do within this realm and study within this realm. Big picture, what kind of things are you guys looking at doing?
Okay, yeah, so I think that's a really exciting time for us. And so the most exciting part right now is that we're partnering up with Football Canada. And so we're becoming the research operation arm. And the idea here is that, you know, obviously Football Canada is the leading body of Canadian football, you know, for the country. And so partnering up with them allows us to grow this project, you know, way beyond our lab right now. And so the number one step is volume. So we want to see in a very, very large volume of players, what is the common weaknesses that we see for different age group and for different position? And then how does that vary over time, you know, with age? And maybe perhaps there's also, you know, differences between different provinces. And maybe there's different rules or different coaching practices that are being implemented. And so can we use the baseline assessment as a way to identify things that are working and things that are not working and provide that evidence for the, you know, for the football community? So that's step one. Step two is to really start introducing those behavioral interventions on top of those baseline assessments and see how that can be, you know, that can help teams reduce the risk of injury. So if you think of, you know, in the next few years, the best, you know, the dream would be that most teams, you know, during their preseason combine, which most teams will do for physical testing, they include, you know, some of those drills and they send us the film. We analyze it for them. We send it right back. And then we build that database of movement for athletes. And we help teams reduce their risk of injury and reduce their exposure to head impacts by providing a data-informed platform through Elite Neurokinetics in order to optimize coaching practices. And this is key because coaches are busy, right? Like we're pretty busy as coaches to, you know, prepare game plans, prepare the skill set, prepare practices. And so what we're trying to do as scientists is to say, well, we have expertise in data management and data analysis. And so let us help you optimize your team and the way you carry performance through safety.
Well, I'm really excited about the work you guys have done in this initial study and in the plans you have for the future. I think really the important part of this and what I want to relate to all our coaches who listen is that whether you have Allen's team out there analyzing this or you're able to just look at this yourself, start looking at your technique. What can you do to improve your player's technique, especially if you're watching that film and you see constant head-to-head contact, you see constant leading with the helmet. There's something there that we need to look at fixing. And I'll share some information at the end here on the systems we've put together that we feel are superior for that. But that's where we can make a difference. You know, in this whole thing, science certainly aided this team in all the things they did to improve themselves and improve their technique and eliminate 30% of those head impacts. But really, it all comes down to coaching. So it still is is on us as coaches to be able to find the best methods, learn how to teach them, and make our players better, especially in relationship to contact, because that's a major part of player safety moving forward.
Yeah, I think that's such an important point you made there. Like, you know, looking for patterns. That's really the fundamental principle here. You look for patterns and things, you know, why are my players engaging in this contact in this situation? And I see that over and over and over. Well, if that's the case, there's something to be done here in practice that, you know, to really try to target that and fix that. And, you know, back to what you said, you know, our job as coaches is to implement the best system to make your players better. Well, the beauty of science and data behind it is that it allows us to actually continuously monitor the system and see what works and what's not working. And so if it's not working, well, we should fix it as opposed to allocating all these resources to it, right? So having this data behind it allows us to continuously monitor that process over time and see how we can keep going up.
Well, Dr. Champagne, you keep up the good work, both on the field as a coach and in your quote-unquote laboratory. The information and the data that you're coming up with definitely is important to the game, so I appreciate all you're doing there. For our listeners who are interested in just learning more about what you guys do, is there a website they can look at or any kind of contact information?
Yeah, of course. So we have a website called EliteNeuroKinetics.com, and they can feel free to reach out to me on Twitter, at @DrChampagne_ and or via email a.champagne@queensu.ca. So yeah, any media is fairly, I'm fairly accessible and happy to answer any questions. And I would love to, you know, see how we can incorporate ways to collaborate with teams and involve them in our research.
And we'll share the links that Dr. Champagne mentioned. Coach Champagne, do you go by both of those? Are you Dr. Coach or are you just Coach
and
Doctor?
Some of the players always mess with me, but you know, Coach Champagne is more than good on the field. And then I use Dr. Champagne when I need to be serious.
There you go. But we'll share your links as well as the study, a link to the study in our show notes. Dr. Champagne, thank you for the time. Thank you for the work you're doing. And I look forward to seeing more of your studies here.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for having us. It's a really great pleasure to be on this platform. And I will say that, you know, USA football has really been an inspiring story to watch from our side. And we learn from it every day.
And for our listeners, I did mention our system for blocking, our contact system. It's for blocking and defeating blocks. And it's a method that removes the head as a tool for contact. It's something I started to learn these techniques as a college coach somewhere around 2009, 2010. And honestly, at the time, we were looking at it for performance-based things. Now, it turns out it was a safer way because it significantly reduces head impacts in blocking. We have our advanced tackling system as well, which is just incredible. And all these things are designed to start teaching your players all these skills and fundamental movements right now in the offseason outside of a football environment. So they don't violate any kind of teaching rules, any kind of rules you might have in your state. Please check those out. Everything is available at footballdevelopment.com. Register with your email. Get 3 free videos from any of those systems, as well as our free shoulder tackle system, which has all the Seahawks put together with us on the quote-unquote hawk tackle. We call it the shoulder tackle system. And again, that's available for free at footballdevelopment.com.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.